everyone. It's the Yoga Woman, Debbie Barnett. Today is Friday, September 25th, 2015, coming to you from Orange County, California. Welcome to my third edition of Yoga Cast, casting a yoga net into the world. You can find my other programs on SoundCloud under the Yoga Woman, and I'll be referring to some of those here in a little bit, so you might want to check those out. And my website also is The Yoga Woman, so you can go there and find out what I'm up to. So we've just had the sun ingress Libra 2 days ago, so the start of our fall season here in the Northern Hemisphere. Libra is cardinal air, so cardinal signs initiate since they kick off the seasons. So we're in a time of initiation, of new beginnings, of fresh starts. So what is it that you're starting this new season? And then air being intellectual, Libra being about partnerships. So maybe it's communicating about partnerships. And today's topic in our yoga cast is going to be the five types of thought. This is from Yoga Sutra Chapter 1 and Sutra 6 and 7. And also on my SoundCloud account, there's a little sample of me chanting these sutras. So if you want to hear these in Sanskrit, head on over there and check that out. So we'll talk about the five types of thoughts. We'll add those to what we talked about last month in the kleshas, the five reasons for suffering. We'll talk about three things that we can do to gain correct knowledge, and we'll talk about the goal of yoga. Sound good? All right, here we go. So sit back, take a nice deep breath, breathing all the way into the bottom of the lungs. Feel your side ribs expand, upper chest expands. And then when you exhale, feel your shoulders sliding down your back. Feel your jaw relax. Feel yourself letting go of any tension, any stress, so that you can be fully present to the words I'm about to share. So we'll jump right in. The five types of thought. The first one is correct knowing, correct perception. That's known as pramana. The second is misconception or mistaken thinking. That's viparyaya. The third is imagination. That's vikalpa. The fourth is deep dreamless sleep, known as nidra. And the fifth is memories, and that's smriti. So these five things are what the mind does all the time. So when a woman asks a guy, what are you thinking? And he says, nothing, right? He's doing one of these things. He's either understanding things correctly, he's misperceiving, he's imagining, he's sleeping, or he's in memory time. And that's not just guys, by the way. Women do that too. But it's just funny that women tend to ask men, what are you thinking? And they say, nothing. Not quite true. So the five types of thought are what the mind habitually does. And so our goal in yoga is to be able to become the observer of the mind so that we can witness these thoughts and recognize them for what they are, and then use our perception, our correct perception, hopefully, to avoid making mistakes in the future. We can see down the path of, oh, this doesn't look like it's going to turn out well. Maybe I shouldn't go down that path. So it's to avoid future suffering. And it's another goal is that we become spiritual beings, purusha, which does not change, that's not contaminated by mental activities, that the mind is released from bondage only when it's firmly established in itself. And that's what yoga is, being firmly established in itself. And that is only possible when these activities of our mind are properly channeled. So I'll go into a little bit more detail here about the five varieties of thought patterns. The first one being pramana is the one that we want to aspire to. We want to have correct perception. So imagine your mind is like a computer. Information comes in, and if that data, if that information is corrupted, the output's going to be corrupted. So garbage in, garbage out. It's a famous phrase in the computing industry that whatever information, whatever input comes in, if it's not pure, if it's not correct, if it's not true, then you're going to have a faulty output. So pramana is the one that we want to try to achieve most of the time, is correct knowing, correct perception. It's true, accurate, valid knowledge, and it's comprehension. So it's being able to understand things as they really are. And from yoga, we get a different perspective on life. We see things differently than how most of the world sees things because we're coming from a yogic perspective, one that's lasted for thousands and thousands of years. Why? Because it works, very simply. So we learn to discern things using our mental faculties and being able to apply wisdom to what we're taking in, and then we can create those correct perceptions. So imagine that you're sitting next to a river and you're watching the river flow, and your mind is like that river. So you have these thoughts that flow past you, but you're the observer who stays on the bank of the river, and you're unaffected. You're peacefully undisturbed. You're unaffected. You're uninvolved with the thoughts. You're just watching the river as it makes its way along. So that's what we want to stay in as much as possible, that state of correct perception, being unattached from our thoughts. And then the second thought pattern is called viparyaya, and that's misperception or misconception. And so that's when we don't understand things clearly. It's incorrect understanding, not seeing clearly. It's data that's corrupt. And Franz Moors talks about incorrect knowledge is confused understanding. It's not based on the real nature of the object. And the reasons that we have this poor understanding or this misunderstanding, there are three. It could be poor sensory perception. Maybe we didn't hear something correctly. And I always think of the old Saturday Night Live skit that had Gilda Radner as Roseanne Rosanadana. And she would be given a topic and she'd go off on a tangent about something totally unrelated to whatever the topic was because she misheard, she didn't perceive correctly what the topic was. So she'd go off on some wild side note. And it was pretty funny. But it's not so funny when it's happening in your life. So poor sensory perception is one of the causes. Another one is failed logic. Maybe we didn't think things through. We didn't consider the consequences, or we had a piece of information that was missing, and so we were making decisions based on mistaken logic. And then the third would be information from an unreliable source. For instance, if you're in an unknown part of the town and you ask what seems like a local for directions and they steer you wrong, that was information from an unreliable source. Maybe that person was visiting too and didn't really know where to go, but he didn't tell you that. So that source became unreliable. Or sometimes it's all three together: poor sensory perception, failed logic, and information from an unreliable source leads to misconception or mistaken thinking. The third activity, imagination, vikalpa, it's fantasy, delusion, hallucinations, invention, conceptualization, mental constructs. And it becomes negative when it turns to worry, anxiety, and catastrophe thinking. Franz Moore says that imagination comes from knowledge derived from words while the object itself is absent. So we're just seeing things in our mind rather than experiencing them firsthand. The fourth type of thinking is nidra, which is deep, dreamless sleep. And it's the absence of other mental activities. So it's when we're not even dreaming, when our mind isn't in that dream mode, when we're sleeping. And many of you may be familiar with a type of guided meditation called yoga nidra. And yoga nidra is a guided meditation that systematically relaxes different parts of your body. So maybe they'll start at your head and your eyes and your jaw relax, shoulders relax, chest, belly, hips, thighs, and you work your way down the body, creating this deep sense of relaxation. So nidra in this case is dreamless sleep, not the guided relaxation. And then the fifth type of thought pattern to become aware of is memories, smriti. And so memories would be souvenirs, recollections, remembering. It's the ability to store and retrieve information. And this one, this thought pattern, can apply to any of the previous ones. And in fact, we may add imagination to our memories. We may embellish them and make them bigger than life. Or we might project our worry or confusion about the future based on what happened in the past. So that's going to color our future because we're not coming from a place of presence. We're coming from a place of memory. And about smritaya, Franz Moore says that memory is the retention of past experience. So we're able to bring these things up from the past. And so those are the five activities of the mind. And we can get to that state of pramana, of correct perception, with three ways to gain correct knowledge. The first one is direct perception, and that's called prajaksha. So it's direct perception or cognition. And this one is the priority. This is the one that we want to do most of, that when we have a decision to make, we're coming from our own experience, our own understanding, our own wisdom, rather than relying on somebody else. But direct perception is always the most reliable source of information, and it relies on good functioning of the sense organs. So an example would be if it's raining outside and I look out or I open the door and I see the rain, I know from direct experience, hey, it's raining, which, considering that we're in a drought, that would be quite welcome right now. The second way of gaining correct knowledge is by inference or by reasoning or deduction. It's called anumana. It's using analogies or well-constructed logic. It's logical deduction when direct proof is not available to reach a conclusion. In our example of the rain, that would be when somebody walks in from outside and they're dripping wet. I can assume that it's raining. I don't see the rain. I don't hear the rain. I'm not out in it, but I see by somebody else that it's raining out. And so that's inference. And then the third way to gain correct knowledge is by someone else's authority or testimony. That's agamaha. And it could be a weather forecast in a far-off destination. I can check the internet to see what the weather's going to be so I can pack accordingly. I'm relying on another source of information, somebody that's competent and can provide evidence. And sacred texts and tradition would fall into this form of gaining correct knowledge. And then teachings with a strong foundation and correct knowledge are called pramanani. So we have direct perception, we have inference, we have testimony from an authority, and then we have correct knowing. So those are different ways that we can gain this information of correct knowledge so that we can make better decisions and remain that unattached observer sitting along the banks of the river. Talk briefly about each of these five ways of thinking. So to go into a little more detail about pramana, or correct perception, if you're in a conversation with somebody and maybe you don't quite understand something, it's, you know, stopping them and gaining clarity. Say, I didn't hear what you said, or could you repeat that, or let me summarize and see if I got that correct. And that way we can correct the mistakes before they go too far. So not being afraid to ask for validation of your understanding or your comprehension is a good thing to do. Misperception, that's the second thought pattern, viparyaya, seems to cause a lot of trouble in our relationships. We start out, we think we're on the same page, and we have common values and common goals, and then the further along you get, you realize, wow, we're really two totally different people who don't even have the same background or foundation. And so misconceptions and mistakes happen because of false knowledge. We thought the person was on the same page with us, but turns out that they're not. And then imagination, the third one, vikalpa, can be used negatively when it's in worry or anxiety, catastrophe thinking. We imagine or we fantasize about something going wrong. Oh, what if I run out of money? Or what if the economy collapses? What if I lose my job? What if my partner leaves me? What if this? What if that? All these things that create worry and anxiety, that create suffering, that's based on something that doesn't even exist. Another example of that would be people who live in fantasy, like they're going to win the lotto and everything's going to be wonderful in their life and they'll never have to worry about money again. That's a delusion. They say that most lottery winners actually end up worse off in the long run than they were to begin with. So if you live your life in fantasy thinking everything's going to be hunky-dory in the future, that's going to cause suffering. And the fourth, the deep dreamless sleep, nidra, that's most people when they're asleep, they're not thinking about anything else, but that's one of the forms of mental activity that is the absence of other activities. And then the fifth one, memories or smriti, is an example of that would be people with their closets. I've done organization in the past where I help people organize their closets or their living spaces, their offices. And people love to hold on to souvenirs, whether it's, oh, that's the outfit I wore on that one date, or when I had that job interview, or somebody gave me that, and even though it doesn't really fit anymore, I have to keep it because it has this memory attached to it. Or they keep birthday cards or love letters from their teenage years, whatever it might be. These are all stuck on memories. It's memories from the past that may or may not serve us anymore. But the problem is when we make decisions based on these memories instead of making decisions based on our future situation. And then last month, in our yoga cast, I talked about the kleshas, or the five colorings of the mind, the five veils that cause suffering. So when you add those to our current topic of the five activities, we can see that when we have avidya, it's very close to vipalyaya. So avidya is misperception or ignorance, the main one being that we're separate from source, that we're individual rather than part of the whole, and that we're eternal rather than temporary. And so when we mix avidya with misconception, vipalyaya, mistaken understanding, we can see why we have the problems that we do. It's incorrect right from the start. And then the second klesha was asmita, or ego, or undue trust in the individual self. It could be arrogance. And so if we mishear something, like somebody's tone is a little off, or we don't quite hear what they said, and then our ego gets involved and we decide to take offense, oh, I'm offended that you would say that, that's gearing up that veil of ego, of too much about me, incorrect knowledge. The third klesha is raga, or cravings, addictions. And so when we are stuck in the past of, oh, this drug, this alcohol, this sugary sweet thing gave me pleasure in the past, so I should have that now, I crave that now, so I can have that same experience now. So that's using your memory attached with a craving, and it creates an addiction. And that's a problem when it controls your life. Everybody has cravings. I'm not saying that if you have a craving, you're addicted. But if your life is controlled by that craving, then it's an addiction, then it's a problem. And that's what causes suffering. And then the fourth of the kleshas is dvesha, or excessive avoidance. I use the example of the selling cars. I was stuck in a past memory of, I'm not successful at sales, therefore I'm not going to do it again. But it could also be a future thing, that if a woman's in an abusive relationship, say, and she has a fear of the future, of how is she going to survive on her own, how is she going to make a living, is she going to be free from her assailant, is he going to be able to track her down? So that would be using imagination for avoidance. And then the fifth of the kleshas is apinivesha, which is all fears, but mainly the fear of death. And that's the ego's thinking that it's going to become extinct when the body dies. So that's a fear of something in the future that's inevitable. Everybody's going to die. It's, you know, the nature of our physical form. It's going to go back into the earth. But we have this fear of the future. And so there's an imagination or a fantasy that we're going to be able to overcome death. And you see that a lot in the advertising world is, oh, take this pill or eat this food or, you know, take this surgery and have this super experience of cheating death. Well, it's not going to happen. It might delay the aging process, but it's not going to delay the death process, because that's coming whether we like it or not. And so when we can become the witness of our mind, we're just the person sitting on the edge of the river watching the thoughts flow, we begin to label it. I remember when I first started meditating, and I would have a hard time sitting because my mind would want to do all these other things. It came up with 101 excuses for not sitting still, that I had to do this right now before I went to work, else I'd forget, or my back hurts, or this or that. So all these distractions, all these reasons for not sitting there. And yet over time, I was able to just sort of step back and go, okay, I get to watch what my mind does. I get to see it jump through its hoops. It's like my mind is a circus, and it's got all three rings of the circus going all at the same time. with jugglers and tightrope walkers and the lion tamers, and it's all happening all at once. And so it can create mental chaos, to say the least. And when I first started meditating, I used to watch a video by, he was a former Buddhist monk by the name of Jack Kornfield, and he would talk about labeling your mind. So when you're sitting and you're watching what your mind does, watch it jump through its hoops, you could label things that go into the future, into fantasy and imagination, as future thinking. Or when you're remembering something from the past, or you're rehashing something that happened previously, you label that past thinking. And then you just gently bring the mind back with a mantra. Maybe it's be here now, or breathe, or be present, or whatever it might be, is that you just begin to notice, oh, wow, I'm going into future thinking, I'm going into past thinking. How much time do I actually spend in the here and now? And usually it's not that much, to tell you the truth. I'm speaking for myself here. There's very little time spent in the present, and yet truly that's all we ever have. The past doesn't exist any longer. It's only a memory, collective memory usually. The future hasn't happened. We have the ability to change the future based on the decisions that we make today, the actions that we take today, but really it's just a fantasy. And so if you're spending your time in either of these two realms, in either of these two mental processes, you're going to miss out on a big chunk of your life because it only happens in the present moment. All right, so let's talk about some of the ways that we can gain correct knowledge. Okay, so direct perception, inference, somebody else's authority lead to correct knowledge. But the best one, of course, is trying it on for yourself, is pramana, or prajaksha, rather. So you can listen to what I say, you can hear my words and say, oh, that sounds nice, Debbie. Sure, I'll take that on as the way it is, but really, it's better if you do it yourself. I might be an authority on some things, you might be able to gain some knowledge or wisdom, but really, it's when you apply these teachings to your own life and see how they work for you, that's where the real benefit comes in. So it's like applying the scientific method. And the scientific method has five parts. You come up with a theory of, okay, Debbie says that suffering comes from the mind, according to the Yoga Sutras. So let me observe what my mind does. And my theory is that I'm going to feel better after I meditate rather than not meditating. And then you try it out for yourself. You see how it goes. You know, maybe it's challenging, maybe it's easy. There's lots of different types of meditation. You could try different ones and find the one that works best for you. And then you observe the results. Okay, I feel calmer after I meditate. I feel like I make better decisions. I'm coming from a place of clarity. I feel like my stress has lowered significantly. I'm sleeping better. Okay, yeah, I think that this does work. I think this detaching from my mental machinations really does work. And then you have direct perception. You have direct experience. And that's the best way to create pramana, or correct knowledge. Okay, so if anyone has questions about anything that I've covered today, if you want to go into more depth about these things, you're welcome to email me. That's Debbie, D-E-B-B-I-E, @theyogawoman.com. And again, check out my SoundCloud account, The Yoga Woman. And I have my previous two podcasts on there, as well as some of the Yoga Sutras that I've chanted. So until next time, enjoy this fall season, this time of new beginnings, the last part of the year. I think we have like less than 100 days left in the year. So how will you spend your time? And hopefully you'll apply some of these things to your life, and I'd love to hear the results. Until next time, namaste.